Welcome to A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood with your host, Angela Jones. Presented by Brighter Day Law, listen to the stories of the people who make Colorado Springs a great place to live and make our world better every day. We want to give back to those who give so much to us. Now, here's Angela Jones.
Well, good morning. It's another brighter day in the neighborhood, and it's a really exciting day today. We're coming at you from the Mountain Country Studios in the Chapel Hills Mall. It's a KPPF's new partnership station, and also super exciting, we're back here today with Melissa Bannereau of Bannereau Counseling and Consulting. Hi, Melissa.
Hi there.
So I'm so glad that you were able to make it back in. I know the last time we met, we kind of ended up mid-sentence on some of the exciting new counseling modems that you're engaged in. And so I invited you back, and I'm glad you were able to work it out to get back here with us.
Me too. It was a lot of fun.
So why don't we just kind of dive right into these new modalities and, you know, kind of, I don't know if people would pick that up, but I guess if you would back it up just a little bit and sort of talk about what you were doing and what you're doing now and maybe the transition, what caused you to take that
road? So originally, well, it's funny, if we went way back, I did CBT. I don't know if you're familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy. That was years ago, and it kind of works backwards because you're looking at thoughts and how thoughts lead to feelings. And what we've learned with EMDR since then is that if we get to the feelings, then we can kind of actually get to the body and get to changing the thoughts almost organically.
Okay, so let me make sure I'm understanding. So with cognitive behavioral therapy, we've gone through the idea. It's that basically our feelings flow from what we believe or what we're thinking. And so what you're moving into now says get to the feelings, especially those that are physically manifesting. And once you can get there, then the thoughts themselves change.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
And so in some ways with EMDR, we have to find out a little bit about the negative belief. Like we would literally pick a trauma. And then within that, as you and I or whoever were working through trying to figure out where we want to go with it, we kind of chat about, well, so what do you believe in that moment? What's that belief? And it could be something like I'm unworthy or I'm going to die. I mean, there's all sorts of, and it's not like literally the words are coming through your head.
Right.
It's more of this just feeling. And then we would work through it. And then on the other side, it would be this new I am safe. I'm worthy. And it's not something that would be an actual equation. And whatever happens is amazingly more empowering than what we logically might think before we do it. But now if I use this therapy that's called AEDP.
Okay, and that stands for?
Accelerated Experiential Dynamic Psychotherapy.
Okay.
All these letters just drive me crazy.
I know.
I don't like them. I really don't. So then we're able to literally just kind of find the body, see what emotion's right there, and ride waves of emotion. And all of a sudden, we go from a place of words to no words to amazing new words. And so we're, instead of just picking a trauma and then being with a feeling, we're getting into the room together and letting feelings just organically happen, because that's really how life happens. And if you're with me, I can feel a feeling much easier than if I'm alone. Or even with what EMDR can be relational, but often that therapist is like, okay, go ahead, feel it. I'm going to be over here. Watch me do that, which is not as relational.
Right. So, all right. So some people are familiar with EMDR. And so with the EMDR, there's a certain amount of, I guess the idea, my understanding of it is that you're kind of going between the hemispheres of the brain to rewire.
Right.
That trauma interrupts that in some way. So there's sensory things that are happening, like either sounds or lights that are going back and forth from left
to right. Or
even
someone's hand. And
okay,
what we're trying to do is actually move it from a stuck place. It's it's in the body. It's not literally in the head. And so we're literally helping it move from a stuck place, almost like if you think of a scratch on a record. Trauma is just like that.
Okay, so let me see if I can get you to kind of deep dive a little bit more into this. It's in the body, okay? And so, like, can you think of like a simple example or like a very basic example that most people would be able to identify? Like, you know,
so it's interesting because we were talking about EMDR. I often think of a soldier who, let's say, a bomb went off. They're in the desert, and they might even, I don't know why I like the idea of the, an example, their hands in the sand.
Okay.
And then let's say they heal, they do a lot of processing, they maybe 5 years later, they go to the beach. Mm. They're fine, but all of a sudden their hand gets in the sand just the exact same way. Mm-hmm. It's not a thinking thing, and boom, their brain now is back right at that moment. Mm. It could be a smell. We have really good ones. Like, you know, for me, my mom is from Brazil, and if I smell a specific scent of baking bread, I'm back in my grandparents' house in Brazil.
Okay, so let me give you an example. I know this is going to sound a little funny. When I was in the sixth grade, I used to have to ride the bus. I was just inside the county line, but in a different town, and we had this really long bus ride. But the particular bus driver, she played this song called Devil in Blue Jeans all the time. And for whatever reason, anytime I hear that, and I don't hear it very often now, but anytime I hear that, I can feel,
yes,
I feel like I felt the when I was
it's
on that
visceral,
bus. I can't
isn't
even
it?
Say it was like a specific day or
no, you marinated in it.
I'm just telling you, it was like if I hear that song, I'm on that bus. Yeah. And I think a lot of us relate with
that's exactly
music
very, yeah.
will kind of take us
oh, yeah.
to another time and place. So let's say for whatever reason, that feeling on the bus, I would hear Devil in Blue Jeans, but that feeling on the bus wasn't good.
Right.
Like maybe I was bullied. Maybe mm-hmm. it was sad mm-hmm. having to go there every day. I don't have those negative feelings, but let's just say I did. And I want to move through that. I mm-hmm. want to deal with that. How would, what EMDR, how would you take me through that with EMDR?
Well, the irony is I actually had a client that did something similar. He was okay. motorcycling and this song came on and it brought him back to a really bad place mm-hmm. in teenage okay. time. So for him at first, because he had done a lot of EMDR with me, he even just tried to stay and breathe and just mm-hmm. find his body. Mm-hmm. And it kind of dissipated and music changed. And so he brought in the song and we used the song. And so we use it as a target. And for him, it was kind of similar like what you're saying for you. It's not like it's a specific moment. It's right. just every time he went to that diner, he just had this awful feeling about himself.
Every time you hear 80s music, you feel like you're back in middle school
right,
or Gawky
exactly.
or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we were able to really move through a lot of painful, really, I think, negative self-images and things okay. that he went through. And it's a really good example, too, of the, what he felt at a core level was sadness. Mm-hmm. And at the other side of it, he was astonished at how he's like, oh, my gosh. Like, at first, he felt like sun on his back, and then he felt lighter. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like the AEDP therapist in me, which
right.
is a different therapy.
Okay.
But it, we do right. we, right. I can even do that in okay. this other okay. therapy. But then it's like, what's it like to know we just rode a bunch of waves of sadness, and now you yeah. feel lighter?
Right.
And to be able to notice, wow, like emotion is a healing thing. It's not a bad, scary thing.
Okay, so with EMDR, the process would be something along the lines of listen to the song, associate the feelings with the song, and then you do the sensory rewiring to get basically to not feel that way anymore.
Kind
Is
of.
That
I mean,
right?
you're still really trying to ride a wave of emotion.
Okay.
You're noticing where you feel it. As a therapist, I'm going to keep checking with the person because you mm-hmm. want to keep them in what we call a window of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually even talk about we don't want to be too far on the inside of the window of tolerance, and we don't want to be trying to break the window either. So along the way, I'm checking it, like, how is it now? How is it now? And
right.
it's funny because if I work with men especially, I'm good. Okay, well, 0 to 10, where are we? 9. Like, no, 9's not good. But that's my job, to really
right.
help someone. And the other part of it, because all of this is somatic, to be able to like, okay, so what are you noticing now?
Okay. And explain what you mean by somatic.
It's in the body.
Okay.
And
again,
so,
it goes back to
right.
in the body.
And the wild thing now that I've broadened it to this other kind of therapy, what I'm also learning is that when we think of somatic experience, it's not just what you see, feel. There's the hearing, the sound, the taste. There's imagery. There's metaphor. If I personally really think it to feeling like a tree with roots mm-hmm. underground and branches that go beyond me and all the mm-hmm. stuff that goes on within a tree, I have a bigger, more expansive sense of myself, even though I have no understanding of really what it's like to be a tree.
Right.
But it's a great metaphor.
Right, right. Okay, and so contrast, you know, if a person were to come to you and you didn't have the EMDR tool,
yeah.
right? And it's the same thing. I've got this song. Every time it comes up, it makes me feel like I'm on this bus. You know, I don't want to feel like I'm on this bus. help me get through it?
Well, if I didn't have EMDR or AEDP, I'd probably try and do something very cognitive, which we're just going to sit there and try and think of what do you want to believe about yourself, and almost mm-hmm. mechanically, okay, let's use that as a mantra. And so in a sense, it's almost like a Band-Aid over the wound.
Okay.
Versus really kind of having this tool or these tools to be able to really find right. what's in and move through it so you're not stuck each time.
Well, what about with the AEDP?
Yeah. So it would be really similar. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because AEDP also, I'm trying to think of how to say this, because I can get really jargony. Mm. Those parts, like the client I was talking with, I would actually try and actually help move to this place of, okay, here's your current self. Mm-hmm. And we have our past self. And in the middle of that, we have what we call our core self. That's the okay. part that no one can hurt. I don't care, Holocaust or whatever. That's that. And so when you get triggered, it's like that past wounded self goes straight to the forefront. And all of a sudden, you can't tell the difference between core, current, and past. So my first step might be to, like, can we even just see if we can pull this apart? And we literally visually start to, and people will feel it in their body, the sense, wow. well, they're just watching my hand. Hmm. And then we're trying to even take what really belonged here, but that's in that current place, and say, can we put that back over here? And at first, it's very triggering to people. I don't want to put that ick into my teenager self,
right.
but that's where it belongs.
Right.
And if we can put it back there, then the client and I can then imaginarily attend to that self that never got seen and have what we call a corrective experience. Our imagination's amazing. We can literally imagine all sorts of ways of getting those emotional needs met, even though they never actually happened. And I have clients that are like, well, that seems, they don't, it's hard for them to grasp using imagination to heal. And so then I talk about how, well, how many times have you imagined the worst happening and what happens in your body?
Right.
Your brain can't tell the difference.
Well, I'm going to delve a little bit more into this, but I want to remind our listeners, you're with KPPF and A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. I'm Angela Jones, your host, and today we're with Melissa Bannereau of Bannereau Counseling and Consulting. So you were talking, Melissa, about a little bit earlier about, you know, your former self and your current self and, you know, basically creating a container, you know, is something of that nature?
Well, in a sense, it's almost like teasing it out.
Okay.
Because often when we're triggered, literally, if you think of couples in a fight, most of the time those couples are not their adult self. There might be a five-year-old and a five-year-old or... And so it's.
I can say that's true for my husband when we're in a fight.
Yeah, just your husband. But so then it's being able to, like, okay, that 5-year old, she needs us.
Right.
Or he needs us.
Right.
But can we even kind of start to even bodily notice the difference? Because in the midst of being triggered, the current self is lost, literally, and they're stuck in the moment, and that they don't even maybe know what actual moment it is.
Okay. So I'm going to, I know you're familiar with the work of Elie Wiesel.
Yes.
Okay. So part of his work is, you know, it's basically mastery over your current self. It's not buying into the narratives that are told to you or even your circumstances. That's the way I would, summarize it. Would you add anything to that?
Well, I would think, and because it's been a long time, but what you're saying and how you're talking about him, it's interesting because we've used him as an example and what he speaks of. Because if we were to look at, let's say, the metaphor of a Matryoshka doll. So even when we're in our adult self, we have a different way of being with a friend versus another friend. And so those are all these little nesting dolls
it's
on the outside.
It's still you,
right?
But it's different parts of you.
Right.
Right.
But then in the inside, that little tiny doll, that's core, it's solid. Mm. It can never be hurt. That's that essence that even when we talk about him, we're talking about how even in these horrible places, this part, it may get really dormant. It may be buried. It may be take some almost thawing.
Right.
But it's always there.
Got it. And so the value, I mean, in what you're doing, and I know I heard, like, as opposed to, say, traditional therapies where you're kind of more or less trying to manage, manage so that your emotions don't cause dysfunction, okay, in your life. Instead, you're trying to get to what's going on and so that you can – is it reframe it? Is it
so you can actually feel emotion?
Okay,
because the emotion's going to do the healing, not me, not the other person's thought.
Explain how that is. I mean, how is it that emotions do the healing? Is it because they're there, and if you ignore them, they're still there, and then that's what causes the interference? Or
well, if you the act of ignoring them takes us to another place, and that place in our therapy we have a triangle, and down here we would say is core state or core emotion, which is joy, excitement, sadness, grief. But up here, if we feel into it and it feels icky, because no one's ever helped us be with a feeling or shamed us for that, we go to shame, guilt, or anxiety over here. We go to our defenses. So if that's our entire life, is I almost feel something, oh my gosh, and so I'm bouncing back here, we end up in a state of horrible anxiety, depression, a combination, burnout, insomnia. And I feel like that's what we're seeing in our society.
And so, and that basically, it's because we've taken the Matryoshka doll, the Russian nesting dolls, as a example. It's like we've created this ironclad exterior that things can neither get in or out of.
Exactly. So, and so, when you say it that way, the defense mechanisms are those exteriors.
Yes, exactly.
And so, there are times when I'm helping someone drop in. One defense comes, and then all of a sudden, when that one kind of moves to the side, the almost opposing one. And so sometimes it's even just the act of saying, can that part move aside? Sometimes really helps so we can feel. Other times it's even just naming, did you notice this right here was kind of like oil, and this is like water? And notice how they, when they fight each other, then we get stuck. But they're both trying to help you, and they really did. When they were formed, they were so necessary because it really wasn't safe to feel when they were formed.
And I know that this isn't as deep as I'm sure you go with people, but one of the things that, you know, I've been on, you know, like a health transformation journey. And one of the things I had to notice about my activities is when I was tired, I would want to eat usually junky foods or like sodas or, you know, carb type stuff, because that gives you that, you know, physiological boost of energy. And it was very helpful to me to start to go, hey, when this feeling came up, like I'm craving X, Y, or Z, hey, I really appreciate my brain. I'm saying to myself, my former self, or the self that's trying to help me not get overly tired, hey, I appreciate that suggestion, but, you know, tired, we're tired, not hungry. And so make a choice that's aligned with rest and the health, you know, that we really want, you know, that all of us really want. And I think it's kind of funny to talk about this idea that even referring to myself, talking to myself as that we, but that seems very in line with what you're suggesting.
And what you just did, and just having that conversation with yourself, is literally probably soothing a part that at one point in time, that was the way to function. You didn't have the opportunity to go, ooh, do I need to rest? And so being able to, and the other piece of that, which I think is fascinating, is for most of us, because we didn't have, let's say, people in our lives that were very emotionally grounding and able to really help us to just feel really seen. I have to say, food is one of those things that can mimic that so well.
Right.
And yet we don't get to ride the waves of emotion. We just eat and then the feeling's over.
Right. Well, especially when, you know, I'm from the South, and food's culture, food's caring, food's,
absolutely,
you know, that's a lot of that thing. You know, just, hey, you're sad, have a cookie. You know what I mean? Or somebody got married, you eat. Somebody died, you eat. Somebody had a baby, you eat. If it doesn't matter what's happening, that's what we do. We bring food, you know, and that's a very loving, it's a very loving thing, but to learn, hey, and this is something I learned just in a business sense, that when you are pushing forward in business, your brain at certain points of time, especially when you're risking certain things or pushing beyond your comfort zone, your brain's going to be like, stop, panic. That kind of thing. And you really have to recognize that as like this terror barrier is meant to help you, but you're in the driver's seat. And so you can step into those places and actually help your former self, or help yourself that's struggling with the messages of the past that were most likely, even by people who were not necessarily able to nurture us or, you know, provide us that being seen, that feeling of significance or what have you, by going into those places and giving that to ourselves, it makes all the difference. So I hadn't really conceptualized it so much as feeling it in the body. I think that's still a very foreign concept to me. I can definitely tie it to that music and to the eating, you know, like not being actually hungry but tired. But that's a very interesting concept.
And just the example you gave, I think, is so beautiful. I'm in the midst of something similar with coaching and knowing that as I try and grow, I will struggle. I will hit these walls, and that life isn't about just feeling good and being able to feel into the feels.
So thanks for listening to another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. I'm Angela Jones with Melissa Bannerup. So I'd like to talk, you kind of touched on this idea of the that things stay in the body. And I believe I read a book one time, and I'm wanting to say Body Keeps the Score. Okay, you're familiar with
I'm
that
familiar
title?
I'm familiar with the book, yeah.
What are your impressions of that specific book, and would you recommend that to listeners?
I actually kind of hesitantly recommend that to listeners because if they've had a lot of trauma, the book is pretty detailed, and I've talked to a lot of clients that it literally had to stop because it literally started to kind of open up traumas that they weren't necessarily ready because as they're feeling in the body and reading other people's, it can. So it just depends on where someone is on their journey. It's a very it's a very good book. I think one that to kind of, I don't know, based on what we've been talking about, there's a book by a woman named Hillary Jacobs Hendel called It's Not Always Depression.
Okay.
And it really covers this whole concept of our, to me, what it feels like our society, who our whole life mission seems to be to not feel. And so then we end up in that top, the triangle bouncing back and forth and ending up with what we think is depression, but really it's this other kind of.
So talk to me more about that, that our whole mission is to not feel, because that, like, that really landed with me in a way that's like, wow, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like, again, it's a complicated thing. When we're growing up, if we're around people that are able to, oh, wow, that was, you're upset, or, you know, then it's there's this welcome and there's invitation, but I can't, I mean, I think of someone holding a baby who's upset. They're like, don't cry, and they're holding keys, and already as a, like a nonverbal child, we're already hearing your big emotions are too much. So even before we're verbal, we're already kind of figuring out how can I be loved? And more often than not, I've got to start putting these little feelings somewhere else.
Well, and that's interesting that you would say that, because I think there is a part of, like, speaking of children myself, like, I don't know, I'll get on a plane, I swear every plane has a screaming small child on it, and I'll tell you that's one reason I'm super glad that my children are adults. And, you know, I have gotten to a point where it used to really bother me to hear little kids. Now I have more empathy, not only for the child and for the mother, because, you know, no parent wants their baby screaming on a plane. But I don't know if that's something that comes with age, or it comes with just becoming more comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. Like, you know, I don't agree, per se enjoy hearing it as such, but, you know, I think that's what we're trying to do. We do want the child to calm down because we don't want the child to be upset. But it's, I think it's very, I can say as a young mother, it was very me driven. Like, I don't want to hear this. Right. I don't like how I feel when you're
my feels,
expressing
right.
this.
And so if the baby hears someone instead saying, oh my gosh, like I literally listened to this therapist talk about how she was there for a newborn who wouldn't stop crying. They like brought the baby in. And so she compared her holding the baby and like, oh, yeah, she would say something like, yeah, it's big. And so her feeling, the baby can't hear the words, but the feeling is, I got you. And the baby stopped crying.
Okay.
But the parents were astonished. Like, you know, we've been saying, don't cry. It's okay. Don't cry. It's okay. And so they're feeling the tightness. The baby, I mean, energeticness is what they're, I mean, that's not even a word, but they're going to feel our energy more than the words, the cadence and
I like energeticness.
I like it too.
I think it's fine. I got your, I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah, you got my energeticness.
That's right. We're vibing on the energeticness for sure. So, yeah, so that's so interesting. And so, again, what was the name of that title?
It's Not Always Depression by Hillary Jacobs Hendel.
Okay. And do you think this is kind of a good primer maybe for somebody especially who's trying to connect with this idea that like my feelings are in my body somewhere, and you know, those that gives us cues.
And it gives a roadmap. And I would say if you have never even want to get therapy, this book would just be a great first step.
And what about does it touch on psychosomatic illness? Is that what that is? Or is psychosomatic illness different?
That's a giant topic. Mm. It definitely touches on some psychosomatic stuff, but it's very much a self-help book that helps with like right here and now for the reader versus like diagnoses. Mm. But it's interesting you say psychosomatic, because there's an interesting conversation with research showing adverse experiences in childhood lead into cancer, drug addiction, depression, all sorts of illnesses. And so they're not psychosomatic. They're real.
Right.
So, but healing this other stuff can help so that it's not even worse. But it's a very complicated thing. Like, it's not going to fix it, but it's going to alleviate things.
Right. Okay. So if you would have something to say to our listeners out there about, like, you know, next steps for any type of help delving into this. I mean, certainly contacting you, but where can they get more resources about these types of counseling interventions?
Hillary's, that book, she's an amazing website. And people that call me, I often just send them a link to her website, because she has a whole box of, like, toolbox. Mm-hmm. She actually is now teaching a class about being familiar with emotion and how to be familiar with emotion. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like she's a good one-stop shop to begin with. And then she has other links and stuff like that there too.
And how can people get a hold of you again?
My website is probably the easiest, which is melissabanero.com, which hopefully they'll see that in the web, our little thing, so I don't have to spell it. But it's Banero with O-T at the end.com. I always joke, if people are surprised, I'm like, well, you don't shop at Home Depot.
Well, I do.
And you can call me Melissa Bannerot.
Melissa, it's been wonderful spending time with you here today. You know, I always enjoy the time that we spend together. Thank you for your generosity with us here at the Brighter Day in the Neighborhood.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us again for another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. I'm your host, Angela Jones, and I'll be here with you this week and every week at this same time and station. Until then, wishing you brighter days.
This has been A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood, presented by Brighter Day Law. Heard every Sunday at 11 a.m. on KPPF, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. Listen to the companion podcast on Podbean.